Hey, welcome to episode 385 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm David Elliott, and I'm painfully awkward David Elliott. Today, it's Fantastic Four Unlimited 5 from March 1994. The new, nefarious, and downright nasty Frightful Four by Roy Thomas and Herb Trimpe. Yeah, you heard me right. I finally got a hold of a copy of Fantastic Four Unlimited 5 because I just had to find out what happened to the She-Thing for myself. Last week, I had read a description of this issue online, which wasn't entirely accurate. So here I am to set the record straight and file a report on this pivotal comic book for myself and to let you know what happens when the She-Thing becomes a member of the new, nefarious, and downright nasty Frightful Four. So the last time we saw the She-Thing, she had been left alone in a glass tube, unconscious, at Fantastic Four headquarters, while the rest of the FF went off to space to deal with Peabach and Devos. While they were gone, Claw, Master of Sound, was alone in FF headquarters, and he saw the She-Thing and decided that he could use her for his own nefarious and downright nasty means. And that takes us to where this issue begins, with the Wizard in jail watching a news report on TV regarding the forgettable foursome of Peabach, Devos, Huntara, and Claw attacking the Fantastic Four in a courtroom. The Wizard is pissed off. He is not happy that some other group of four villains has banded together to fight his favorite foes, the Fantastic Four, and he kicks the TV, smashing it apart. Boy, he's really going to regret that on Wednesday night when he can't watch 90210 in Melrose Place. He tells the guards he needs to get out of there and defend his good name. One of the guards asks, "What name is that, Wizard?" And the Wizard tells him that Wizard is his real name. He had it legally changed. Sounds like Roy Thomas was just too lazy to look up what Wizard's real name is. They take him out of his cell because it's chess day. Time to play some chess. Wizard has a little box with him, which supposedly has chess pieces in it. They bring him into a big room with TV cameras and stuff, and a large computer. A chess-playing computer, which has supposedly beaten both Karpov and Kasparov, famous chess masters, I assume. The Wizard takes his seat, and the game begins. So this chess-playing computer has metallic arms to move the pieces on the board, big red eyes, and big, pink, pouty lips. Of course, big pink lips on a chess-playing computer makes total sense. But in case you're wondering who wins, nobody wins. Just as the game starts, the Wizard's chessboard turns into a flying device. He flies up to the ceiling, and through the skylight, how convenient, his command cruiser is waiting in the sky over the prison. He gets on board, he puts on his purple wizard outfit, and away he goes. Back at FF headquarters, the Fantastic Four, or at least I think they're the Fantastic Four, they look rather odd. Johnny has the pointiest chin I have ever seen. Ant-Man appears to be 2 feet taller than the Thing. Herb Trimpe's art, still deplorable, ghastly, insane, hilarious. It's such a shame because he was a decent artist back in the 1970s, but this 1990s Rob Liefeldian artwork is terrible. I'll say it again and again. It's horrible. I'm kind of surprised that he got so much work in the 1990s, but then again, Marvel was publishing something like 500 comics a month, so they needed every artist they could get. So the FF are watching footage of the Wizard's prison escape on the TV, and they're worried that without Reed, they can't match wits with a guy like that. Between the four of them, they're very low on wits. And to prove this point, Ben gets mad and picks up some metal contraption and he hurls it at the big screen TV, shattering it. Oh boy, he's gonna regret that on Wednesday night when you know what and you know what comes on. Ben rips the doors off the hinges and storms out of the room. He heads into the room, another room, to check on the She-Thing, Sharon Ventura. And over in the pages of the Fantastic Four, Sharon was being kept in this glass tube, sedated. And in the tube, she was laying down. Here, as drawn by Herb Trimpe, the She-Thing is in a glass tank instead of a tube, and she's hunched over on her hands and knees in a doggy-style position. Very undignified. What was Herb Trimpy thinking when he designed this tank? And why didn't any editor give him a picture of Paul Ryan's glass tube so he could be consistent? Why have her on her hands and knees in the tank? Doggy style? It's so awful. Ben points a finger at Ant-Man and asks him why he hasn't cured the she thing yet. He points out that he's not Reed Richards. He's not even Hank Pym. He's Scott friggin' Lang, Ant-Man number 2. I mean, how much can you expect from him? And then Ben starts trashing the room and trying to kill Scott Lang. Ben is now being a total dick for no reason whatsoever. It's terrible writing. Herb Trimpy isn't the only 70s comic book creator way past his peak on this book. Roy Thomas is right there with him. Eventually, they calm Ben down just in time to look out the window and notice a big King Kong-sized gorilla sitting on a nearby roof. Ant-Man hops up on a fly as everyone goes over to check it out. With the FF gone, Claw enters the room, and he takes the she-thing out of her glass box. He offers to help her get revenge on Dr. Doom if she helps him out. The Wizard's airship lifts them both up out of the building in a tractor beam, and they're gone. The big red ape disappears, and the FF return to check on Sharon, and she's gone. Back up on the Wizard's ship, Sharon says, "Hey, I just remembered. I'm one of the good guys. What am I doing here with you two?" Suddenly, Claw and Wizard start fighting with each other over leadership of the group. They both want to be the leader, go figure. Wizard proposes a contest between the four of them for leadership of the group. Sharon is curious who the fourth person is, and it's someone we haven't seen in a long, long time, the Red Ghost. He pops into the room. Sharon tries to attack him, but he makes himself intangible, and she slams into a wall. And guess what? Red Ghost also wants to lead the team, but first, Wizard says they need to defeat the Fantastic Four. They get Sharon to agree that she will remain loyal to the Fightful Four, for now, because she's pissed off the FF for keeping her in that status chamber, on her hands and knees like a dog, no less. I'd be pissed off too. So she agrees to help the Fightful Four and adds, "Don't call me Sharon Ventura, call me She-Thing!" Back at FF headquarters, everyone is in the locker room, changing into civilian clothes. A locker room? Since when have the Fantastic Four had a locker room? There's like a long row of lockers. Who's using all these lockers? Why would they need a locker room and all these lockers? They live there. They have their own bedrooms. There's no need for a locker room. It's like having a locker room in your house. Oh, Herb Trimpy. Johnny's got off somewhere, and Ben leaves also to go by himself, leaving Scott and Sue alone to think about what they can do to find Sharon. Ben heads outside. He hails a cab. He tells the driver to just circle around the city. He's got some thinking to do. This may be the luckiest taxi cab driver who's ever given a ride to the thing, ever. Well, at least it seems that way, until a ray from above blasts a cab and Ben gets sucked up into the air and onto the Wizard's ship. Ben finds himself face to face, or I guess I should say, helmet to face with the Red Ghost. Ben still wearing that helmet over his scarred face. Ben tries to take a few swings at Red Ghost, but misses when the bad guy turns intangible. And then Red Ghost pets and partners. The Super Apes show up. You can't have the Red Ghost without the Super Apes. Now, doesn't that make this a Fightful 7 and not the Fightful 4? So anyway, the apes attack Ben, and after a few pages, they manage to subdue him. Sue and Ant-Man are outside taking a romantic horse and carriage ride in Central Park? I guess Namor isn't the only one who's trying to get his hands on the Invisible Widow. Suddenly, they get zapped by that ray from above, and Sue ends up on some alien planet, apparently, with the She-Thing, and she starts slapping Sue around. Sue says, You could have made me with that backhand of yours. Don't do it again. Great dialogue. Sharon says that if she defeats Sue, she can be part of the Fightful Four. Maybe even the leader. Now, can you imagine the Wizard, Claw, and Red Ghost taking orders from the She-Thing? Can you imagine anyone taking orders from the She-Thing? Maybe if it was a team with Moon Knight, Speedball, and Brother Voodoo, otherwise. No. Sharon tells Sue to call her the She-Thing, not Sharon, and she starts trying to squash Sue with giant rocks. Sue puts up a force field, turns invisible, and runs around, and She-Thing keeps attacking. She manages to get Sue on the ground, and she picks up a boulder, and she's about to squash her to death. Meanwhile, Ant-Man ends up in a room with Claw. How did Claw end up with that easy assignment of taking on the Ant-Man? Maybe I should make fun of Ant-Man, like, next year he's probably gonna, like, be the biggest superhero in the world. So Scott manages to shrink down to ant size and even finds some other ants in the room. But really, being small and talking to ants isn't gonna do much against Claw. Claw shrinks down too, and starts smacking Scott around. Scott figures that now that Claw is small, he should send the ants to attack him. But then, they turn around and attack Ant-Man instead. Turns out those ants are sound-constructed ants created by Claw and his powers. Johnny, meanwhile, has found himself at the Wizard's futuristic mansion, one that he saw back in Strange Tales 102, the Wizard's first appearance. Johnny has a look around and finds the Wizard lounging around in a purple smoking jacket, enjoying a nice ciggy. When Johnny tries to shoot him with his flames, it turns out it's just a hologram. The real Wizard shows up behind Johnny in his usual armor and blasts him in the back. Johnny flames on and flies around the room, while the Wizard uses his powers to make the furniture float, and he hurls it all at the Human Torch, who blasts all the furniture to pieces. Looks like the Wizard will be making a trip to IKEA to replace everything. The Wizard tries another trick, creating a bubble of water around Johnny that extinguishes his flames and leaves him on the floor helpless. Now, why didn't the Wizard just use that first instead of destroying all his furniture? The Wizard goes over and picks up Johnny to throttle him personally, but suddenly, the Wizard yells out in pain. And why did that happen? Because he accidentally stuck his hands in the residual aura of the pocket of non-causality. Duh, of course. Next, in one big two-page spread, we see that all the members of the Fantastic Four are there in the house. Johnny is trying to crawl away from the Wizard. Ben is in another room getting manhandled by the Super Apes. Ant-Man is down in another room dealing with Claw and his ant creations. And Sue is in this room filled with rocks about to get her head caved in by the She-Thing. Ben finally breaks free of the apes, and with the Red Ghost distracted, Ben punches in the face and knocks him out. Sue manages to save herself at the last second with a force field. She rams into the She-Thing with a force field, knocks her out. She falls over on top of Sue, which may be worse than having a boulder on top of you. Ant-Man has a device on his helmet that can amplify the frequency and volume of his voice, and using this device, he's able to cancel out the sound waves created by the ant creatures, and then using his helmet, he creates static that disrupts the sound waves that Claw is composed of, knocking him down, and Ant-Man runs away. Soon, Ben, Sue, and Scott meet up and they find Johnny in a room with the Wizard. Ben runs in and grabs the Wizard by the hands, grabbing his power gloves, the source of his powers. Sue hits the Wizard with a force field, knocking him back, and his gloves come off. Wizard tries to escape on some levitation discs, but Ant-Man shrinks the disc, and Wizard falls to the ground. Wizard wonders what happened to his teammates, and he feels abandoned. But he does have one last trick. A Lethio Ray, which, despite its name, is not lethal. It just immobilizes the FF. The Wizard expects his teammates to come in and finish off the Fantastic Four, but he looks on a monitor, and he sees Claw, Red Ghost, and She-Thing running away from the mansion. The Wizard figures he doesn't have time to kill all four of them before the ray wears off, so he decides to kill no one. What kind of logic is that? Why not just kill at least one of them for fun? What a chicken. So he flies away, and the FF finally become mobile again as the Lethio Ray wears off. And also, the Lethio Ray has made them lose all memory of the events that just transpired. I wish someone would use that Lethio Ray on me to make me forget this issue. Sue recognizes that they're at the Wizard's mansion, so they decide to head back to Fantastic Four headquarters, where Ben wants to check on Sharon, since he doesn't remember that she was ever a member of the Fightful Four. And this issue continues into Fantastic Four issue 384, where Ben realizes that Sharon is missing. So anyway, I thought this issue would explain what happened to the She-Thing, but it doesn't. I feel like I wasted my time, and I wasted your time, I wasted everyone's time. I'm sorry. I read somewhere that she ran off with Wyatt Wingfoot, but guess what? There's no Wyatt Wingfoot in this issue. What happened to the She-Thing? At the end of the day, this issue of the FF Unlimited was not as necessary as I assumed it would be. I hope that future issues of the regular FF series will explain where the She-Thing went. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't remember. It's been like 20 years. So that's all I have to say about this. it's time to rejoin our regularly scheduled podcast, Already in Progress. Welcome to episode 385, part 2 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm David Elliott, and I'm willing to shatter the kneecaps of any of my podcasting competitors. Today is Fantastic Four, 385 from February 1994, Into the Deep by Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. So this issue is a bit of a sidetrack from other previous issues. According to the cover, it's a Star Blast crossover. A Star Blast crossover, more like a Fart Blast crossover. The story begins at Four Freedoms Plaza, which is finally getting repaired from the damage done to it back during the Infinity War. A construction worker almost bumps Infinity War, soon to be a major motion picture. A construction worker almost bumps into the thing and tells him to be careful. He ought to be wearing a hard hat. Ben points out that he has a hard head, a thick skull. No hard hat needed. Ben is wandering around, lost in thought, thinking about how they don't know where Adult Franklin is, and they don't know where Sharon Ventura is. I guess he can't even be bothered to read FF Unlimited 5. Ben finds Sue Richards chatting on the video monitor with the Black Panther, soon to have his own major motion picture, who has offered his assistance in the search for Reed. Once again, Ben tries to convince Sue that Reed is really dead, but Sue's not buying it. She's convinced that Dr. Doom teleported him off somewhere, and he's still alive. So, of course, with all that construction going on, there's going to be an accident, just like when they were building the place in the first place. And one of the construction workers takes a trip and falls. They must pick these construction workers up at Home Depot in the morning. They're not very good. And Sue has to catch him with a timely force field. The construction worker wonders if anyone caught that fall on videotape so he can submit it to America's Funniest Home Videos. Yeah, construction workers falling to their deaths are always very popular on that show. Soon, Ben is downstairs and he heads out the front door, where he is mobbed by reporters. They're asking him if he has any comment on the disappearance of Reed Richards. Is it related to the political unrest in Latveria, they ask? Will Sue change into a black costume? And what about the Fantastic Four being on the verge of bankruptcy? Ben tells them to all get lost, to go follow some other celebrity. Maybe they'll strike it rich with a photo of Princess Di washing her undies, or dead in the back of a smashed up car. Ben pushes a few of them out of the way, and now they have a story. The Thing attacks reporters. Ben's thinking that the way things are going, the FF won't be around much longer. Oh, I know how they can make some money. They could sell their movie rights to Hollywood. Oh, maybe that's a bad idea. Back inside, Sue is feeling like shit because her mind got controlled by that Malice bitch. And now Malice has moved on to Franklin Richards. Sue feels used and abused, and she looks at herself in the mirror, wearing the super slutty outfit, and she smashes it to pieces. The mirror, not the outfit. She looks at a photo of Reed and tells herself that she needs to remain strong to keep the team together and find Reed. Ben Grimm has made his way to Alicia's apartment. We haven't seen her in a long time. No one answers her door, and a neighbor tells Ben that Alicia packed up and moved out a few weeks ago. I guess she's tired of being a rock monster's on-and-off-again girlfriend. Back at FF headquarters, Johnny and Scott Lang are working on that scroll ship they stole a couple of issues ago. Scott seems amazed by all this, and Johnny says he should be used to this kind of stuff, you know, being the Ant-Man and all. Scott replies that he's just a hero with the strength of an average man. He must have seen that Saturday Night Live sketch. He shrinks down, and he's got the strength of a human. Better stay out of this guy's way. He's got the strength of a human. Scott says that he's amazed he was hired by the Fantastic Four as their technical advisor. You know, aren't we all, Scott? Aren't we all? He tells Johnny he's working on that computer, trying to find out where Reed is. But Johnny tells him not to hold his breath. They hear Elijah the Skrull scream, "Leave me alone!" And Johnny finds her with her doctor. He wants to check out her vajayjay. And she doesn't want him anywhere near her vajayjay, saying that he doesn't know anything about Skrulls anyway. He says, "Suit yourself," and he leaves. Johnny tells Elijah that it's fine if she doesn't want to see that doctor, but she should at least see someone. Now, who is the world's foremost expert on Skrull vagina? Actually, it's Johnny himself. An alarm goes off, and Johnny rushes off to check it out. On the video monitor, it's a call from Namor the Submariner, who is sporting an ungodly ponytail. Yow! He demands to speak to Reed Richards. Johnny has to inform Namor that Reed is dead. Namor's first question is, "How Sue?" and says that he would like to express his deepest sorrow for their loss. And he gets off the video right away. I hope he's rushing off to get a haircut. Johnny traces Namor's call, and he's like, "Uh-oh." Back out on the street, Ben is walking around, and he sees an FF flare. He heads back to headquarters and finds everyone in the map room. They have a map room now? Johnny explains the call from Namor, and when he tried to trace the call, there was a disruption because the Earth seems to be tilting on its axis. I don't think anyone has the heart or the intelligence to tell Johnny that the Earth is always tilting on its axis. Sue's worried that the axial shift could melt the ice caps. They've detected two anomalies they need to check out. One near the mouth of the Amazon River, which Johnny says he and Elijah will go check out. And the other at the Marianas Trench, the deepest part of the Pacific Ocean, which he leaves for Ben and Sue to go investigate. I think Johnny picked the nicer assignment on that one. They leave Scott behind to watch the building and to keep working on that computer of Dr. Doom's. So later, Johnny and Elijah arrive at the mouth of the Amazon in the old Bathysphere, which is a small submarine that we haven't seen in a very, very long time. Johnny pulls out the diving suits for going underwater. Their diving suits always look different whenever they use them. But first, Johnny compliments Elijah, telling her that she looks good for a pregnant chick. She says that Skrull biology is different, and Johnny replies, "Not where it counts," so says the world's foremost expert on Skrull vagina. Suddenly, out pops the Ant-Man, saying that's his cue to let his presence be known before the two of them start, you know, getting it on. Scott says that he couldn't bring himself to stay behind, so he stowed away on the Bathysphere. Next, they see something out the window, and it's Triton of the Inhumans, soon to be a major motion picture, along with the Submariner villain Tiger Shark, getting attacked by some crazy octopus creature. Johnny and Elijah rush to put their outfits on while Scott pilots the ship. Johnny and Elijah get out into the water. They start blasting the octopus, which lets go of Tiger Shark and Triton. Tiger Shark turns and heads toward Elijah, so she turns into a big tentacled monster, grabs hold of him before he can attack her. They end up bringing Tiger Shark and Triton onto the Bathysphere and asking them what's going on. Tiger Shark is upset that someone called Timara was killed by those gigantic tentacles. Elijah recognizes the technology at work here. It's called a planetary thruster. In order to find the planetary thruster, Ant-Man goes to work using his powers to talk to ants, or to talk to shrimp, the ants of the sea, I guess. Too bad he doesn't call himself Shrimp Man. That would be pretty cool. Or even better, he could call himself Prawn. So his shrimp friends locate the planetary thruster, which looks similar to the Black Obelisk from the movie 2001, a movie that took place in the Marvel Universe, right? Meanwhile, in the Marianas Trench, wedged down in the deep trench, is another Bathysphere, this one containing the Submariner and Dr. Walter Newell, also known as Stingray, soon to have his own major motion... No, I don't think so. So anyway, he's kind of like a superhero, somewhere below Moon Knight on the bottom of the list of, if it's a list of good superheroes. They're running out of the air, and Dr. Newell is going to die, and Namor can't bust out, or he'll flood the ship and definitely kill Dr. Newell. How they got into this situation was probably explained in previous issue of Namor's own magazine. Just then, a big Skrull spaceship shows up. It's the Stealth Hawk ship, stolen from the Skrulls, piloted by Ben Grimm, along with Sue Richards. They hook up to the ship, and they bring Namor and Dr. Newell aboard. Namor offers his sympathies to Sue, who tells him to save it. Reed might still be alive. Ben, for some reason, has suddenly given up on the helmet and scarf, and now he's just showing off his scarred-up face to everyone. Someone at Marvel finally realized how stupid he looked with that bucket on his head. Ben looks down into the airlock and notices they picked up an extra visitor, an alien-looking critter. Ugh, he better not put that on his head. Back in the Atlantic Ocean, near the mouth of the Amazon, Johnny and the others are out in the water, fighting through those tentacles to get to the obelisk. They reach it and manage to get inside, where they find Tiger Shark's lady friend, Timara, still alive. She's a woman with blonde hair, giant boobs, and red skin. Is she naturally red, or maybe it's just a really bad sunburn? So they free her from the tentacles but she's under the creature's mental control. So Tiger Shark knocks her out, and they carry her away. Back with Elijah, she does something to set the planetary thruster to self-destruct and implode. Triton asks her,
"Exactly what kind of liaison officer were you?"
It seems odd that she knows so much about this planetary thruster. She finishes up and tells Triton they only have a few minutes to get out of there. But suddenly, her belly starts to act up, and she's in pain. She tells Johnny that the baby's coming. Triton grabs them both, swims out of there just in time, as the entire obelisk implodes. Back on the Stealth Hawk, Dr. Newell is explaining that an alien named Zyam the Formulianti is attempting to flood the planet, as he's been working for a band of space pirates known as the Star Blasters. Sue says,
"I'm sure I've heard even cornier names in my time, but I can't remember when."
"Oh, I know when. How about early in the day when you were hanging out with Ant-Man?" Namor points out that the Xylem employs a weapon, a mind-controlling symbiote, that attaches itself to its victim's skull. Oh no. And wouldn't you know it, that's the critter that Ben found. And he put it on his head, and it's attached to his skull. Ben enters the room with Namor, Sue, and Dr. Newell, and he says,
"Here I am, and I'm looking for blood."
And that is the end of the issue. To be continued, but not in the next issue of the Fantastic Four, but right now. Welcome to episode 385, part 3 of the Fantastic Forecast. Today, it's Namor the Submariner 48 from February 1994, Into the Black Abyss by Glenn Herdling and Jeff Isherwood. So Ben stumbles into the room with that brain-controlling parasite on his head, and he's looking to clobber someone. He sets his sights on Namor, and he rams into Namor, and in order to get rid of him, Namor and Dr. Newell decide to get rid of Ben by sticking him in the airlock and washing him out to sea. Dr. Newell assures Sue that Ben won't drown because the parasite on his head will help Ben adapt to the underwater environment. Damn, I want one of those critters now. So they end up flushing both Ben and Submariner out the airlock into the ocean. But don't worry, Namor can breathe underwater. That dude is like a regular Patrick Duffy. They continue to fight, with Namor trying to get that thing off Ben's head. Suddenly, the creature is ripped off Ben's head, and Namor wonders how the hell it happened. But the Invisible Woman materializes, wearing her underwater suit, and she was able to sneak up and pry that damn thing off Ben's noggin. Namor rips that parasite in half, and Sue puts a bubble around Ben's head. They swim back to the ship, and back inside, the ship starts to shake, and Dr. Newell says it's another electromagnetic pulse originating at the bottom of Challenger Deep. And one more of those, it could erase memories of every computer worldwide. Which sounds bad, but 20 years ago, all our porn was stored in magazines in VHS format, so a worldwide computer wipeout would not be a big deal. Namor puts on a headset, and Sue hands him this bazooka-sized device called a destruct mechanism. He looks at it, and he asks, "This little thing?" And Sue replies,
"Size doesn't matter, Namor."
Uh-oh, Sue Richards is single and ready to mingle, and you know what? And you just know that Namor could never compete with Mr. Fantastic and his ability to stretch any of his appendages. So Namor is about to leave, and Sue says goodbye. They come very, very close to kissing on the lips, but she ends up giving him a peck on the cheek. Meanwhile, up in the air over the Pacific, Ant-Man is flying an FF ship carrying Tiger Shark and Tamara, who he drops off in the ocean to help Johnny and Triton. Ant-Man, after that, has to fly back to New York, where Elijah has gone into labor. Tiger Shark and Tamara find that Stealth Hawk in the water below, and they come knocking on the door. Ben is surprised to see they have visitors, and they don't seem like a very welcome visitors, but Dr. Newell tells Sue and Ben that Tiger Shark is a guest of his. Ben's like, "Ain't he supposed to be the bad guy?" So Tiger Shark and Tamara enter the ship, and Tiger Shark asks, "Where is Submariner?" Dr. Newell tells him that Namor is down in Challenger Deep, where they think the second Earth thruster is. They monitor his progress on the screen. So Namor is swimming down into the trench, where a group of red warrior women come out to greet him. They're Tamara's people. Namor says he has no time for games, so he pushes them out of the way and keeps swimming down, deeper and deeper into the pit, where the pressure is getting, more and more pressury. And he drops the weapon down into the pit to destroy the Earth thruster, but in the process, He passes out from the strain of the high pressure of the deep, deep ocean. Sue puts on her helmet, and she heads back down into the water to rescue Namor. Next, we have a Submariner subplot that isn't relevant to the Fantastic Four. At the headquarters of Oracle Incorporated, where Phoebe Mars, a leftover villain from the John Byrne days, enters the office of someone who appears to be the president of the company. She says she's there about his position in the company, and she strips off her clothes down to her sexy red undergarments. And in a scene that seems like it was guest written by Howard Chaykin, she grabs him by the tie and says, "I can see that you've made quite a name for yourself at the top, but I think you'll enjoy yourself just as much on the bottom." And she swipes all the stuff off his desk and jumps on top of him, and well, they do it. But the president of Oracle isn't the only one who's going deep. Sue is swimming down, down, down into that large ocean pit, trying to find the Submariner. But instead of finding Prince Namor, she finds a bunch of scaly underwater monsters, and she pushes them out of the way with a force field and keeps going. Next, she encounters that group of red warrior women, and they start poking at a force field with a bunch of spears. But between the pressure of the ocean and the spears, her force field is breached, and the women grab Sue. Namor wakes up, and Dr. Newell calls him up and tells him that Sue's in danger. He looks up and he sees that Sue is being attacked by those women, but then he looks down and sees that the explosive device isn't far enough down in the trench to destroy the planetary thruster, so he has to make a choice between the two. So of course, he chooses to save Sue. Screw the world's computers. He thinks he's finally going to bang Sue Richards, and he's not going to let a bunch of underwater warrior women rip her in half. He swims in, tosses all the warrior women aside. He sees that Sue is unconscious and turning blue in the face, so he starts to carry her back to the Stealth Hawk. They get into the ship, and he takes off Sue's helmet. Dr. Newell says that she's not breathing. She needs mouth to mouth. And he's about to give it to her, but Namor grabs him, and he yells, "Stay away from her!" He's been wanting to do this for years. He kneels down, puts his mouth on Sue's mouth, breathes in and out, and she starts breathing again. She looks up at Namor and says softly, "I knew you'd come for me, Reed." Oops. Oh, it's so embarrassing to call someone by the wrong name during the throes of mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Fortunately, some other underwater creature shows up. They call it the Jason Unit. It swims down, picks up the explosive device, and it carries it deeper and deeper into the trench. It drops it on the planetary thruster, and it blows up. Now, in that big explosion that fills up Challenger Deep, it kills both the Jason Unit creature and all of Tamara's red warrior women friends, leaving her as the last of her kind. But Namor points out that she and the rest of them might soon be dead too, because there's this avalanche and all these rocks are falling toward the Stealth Hawk, putting them in deadly danger that they can't possibly survive, or so it seems. We'll find out what happens next, back in the pages of Fantastic Four, 386. Now, I've been reading the rest of the Star Blast crossovers, which is a four-part miniseries with crossovers into Secret Defenders, Quasar, Namor, and the FF. This is mostly a cosmic miniseries, so the inclusion of these underwater segments is kind of mystifying. Star Blast also includes characters from the new universe, that short-lived superhero universe from the late 80s. So yeah, as you can imagine, it's pretty awful. Actually, I like the new universe, but Star Blast is pretty awful. These Fantastic Four Submariner issues are readable. The rest of the crossovers are pretty dreadful. Star Blast even has a couple of issues with art by Herb Trimpe and his Liefeldian artwork, which brings us full circle in hilarity, as always. I don't recommend you buy Star Blast at all. Please, please don't. As for this issue of the Submariner, I do like the artwork by Jeff Isherwood. I wish we could have seen more of his work. I actually think he's pretty good. So anyway, that's it for now. You can download other episodes of this podcast at www.podcastff.podbean.com or on iTunes. I've posted some of my favorite panels from each issue of the Fantastic Four on my blog at www.podcastff.blogspot.com. And if you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over.